And joining us now are the two candidates running to represent District 7 on the Boston City Council, Tito Jackson and Cornell Mills. Good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good day to both of you. Thank you so much for coming in. Listeners, and in particular residents of District 7, Roxbury, Dorchester, the Fenway, the South End, what do you want from your next city councilor? What issues matter to you most? This is your chance to talk to your candidates. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And gentlemen, let me start with that last point that Carlene Porcena made. And Tito, I'll start with you. The point that how do you engage? That was an incredibly, shockingly low voter turnout last month. It seems like there's a real need to engage voters around this issues if either of you are going to be successful.
Yes. So we engage folks by delivering. And actually being able to bring deliverables back to this community, which starts with bringing jobs back to this community, which starts with standing up for good schools for our young people, and also which starts with standing up and stemming the uptick in violence that we've seen. I worked with an organization called Dunk the Vote for many years, and we helped to engage over 50,000 people in the quote-unquote hip-hop generation, 18 to 35. But we had to reach them in non-traditional ways. We actually used basketball to reach them. Now we also have to reach folks through social media, Twitter, Facebook. But in our community, we have to host community meetings. I think many folks, including Councilor Turner, did a really good thing by bringing folks together in the community. And we also have to begin to build a vision in our community, and a vision that speaks about what we want, not what we don't want. And if we focus on that, I think we will continue to bring people into the fold and have them civically engaged.
Cornell Mills, same question to you. What do you do to sort of engage and get these number of voters to come up and get involved in the process?
Yeah, well, the weather was terrible on February 15th. This is the first winter election that we've had in a number of years. I've worked on for over 16 years on election day, on primary day, and on the general election, and this was definitely the coldest. It was the lowest turnout, and I think that the reason why most people are not engaged is because there's a sense of hopelessness. Without justice, there's no hope. And if our community doesn't feel like they're getting the proper services, like they're being treated fairly by the infrastructure of the government, whether it be the school committee, whether it be the police department, or whether it be City Hall, and the State House and the federal government included, a lot of hope, it gets lost. And we have to restore that hope by being hands-on, by being able to deliver services that the average voter, that the average people in the neighborhood need. It's the best of times for a lot of people, but it's also the worst of times for a lot of people. And we have to recognize that dynamic and try to change that paradigm. Mm.
Listeners, we're talking to Tito Jackson and Cornell Mills. They're candidates for District 7 on the Boston City Council. You can give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We'll go to some calls shortly. Tito Jackson, let me come back to you. I was struck by something you said. It was in the piece that we just played. You mentioned that little yellow book that a city council gets doesn't give you a whole lot of power. It seemed like you're almost downplaying expectations about what a city councilor can actually accomplish.
It wasn't a downplay. It was a rewriting of that book. It was an expansion of that book. The power that the city council has, and in particular the district city council has, is the ability to advocate and bring folks together. And in our community, we are facing some very real challenges. We have, out of all of the folks who are unemployed in the city of Boston, 55% of them are black. As stated before, 50% of the folks currently to our public schools are dropping out. Mm-hmm. So we have some very, very real challenges that we have to take a very real approach to. And that's really going to be about bringing folks together and, as I stated before, building a vision. But it also starts, honestly, with economic development and revitalization in our community and bringing jobs back. And I have a background in economic development. As you stated, I worked in the Patrick administration, and I've helped to bring over 2,500 jobs. These were in the technology industry, and so it's going to be very important that we, as is happening right now with the Ferdinand Building, which today Mayor Menino stepped forward and said they would be infusing $115 million to revitalize.
Now, this is right in downtown Dudley Square.
Right in downtown Dudley Square, and it's a building that has sat dormant for over 40 years. I'm 35 years old. I've never, ever seen that building open. It will begin to revitalize that area, so we see the bright lights of new businesses artists, as well as all the revitalization that we need. So,
Cornell Mills, let's just sort of pick up on that point that Tito Jackson was making. Mayor Menino today unveiling plans to relocate the headquarters of Boston Public Schools right in downtown Roxbury. Is that a good start for economic development?
Well, it's a great start. We've seen a lot of buildings go up over the past 10, 15 years. A lot of the construction has been done right in Dudley. But I think the bigger question is who's doing the construction? Who's working on those jobs? Are they residents? Are they women? Are they people of color? Are they people who need those jobs the most? I think what's unfortunate about the dynamic and the unemployment that exists in District 7, you know, we do have the highest unemployment rate throughout the state. But when jobs come into the city, rarely do they find their way to District 7. So we have to find a way not just to continue to develop, but develop people.
Why is that in your view?
Well, it is a number of dynamics. I think, you know, we have to be honest about where we are as a city. We have a situation where their cronyism and the patronism, or the nepotism, I should say, we keep seeing the same players involved in the construction process. You know, the same companies, the same people who roll in from out of town, and because they're able to either produce the lowest bid or have a relationship, they end up with most of those jobs. So we need someone on the ground who's able to enforce that. I've done that work in the past. In 2000, I did compliance on the One Lincoln Project, which is one of the largest developments in the city, and it just takes a hands-on leader.
And that's
leader.
A black-owned development in downtown Boston. Am I correct about that?
It is. It's owned by Ken Guscott. And it was the first and the largest black-owned development in the city. And it created a lot of jobs, both on the architectural side, the structural side, and on the maintenance side. It's not just enough to be involved in the construction. We have to make sure that we have people in the community who are involved in the maintenance also.
Well, let's get some calls in because we've got a lot of them already backing up. We're talking to Tito Jackson, Cornell Mills. They're candidates for the Boston City Council District 7 seat. That's Chuck Turner's old seat. And let's go to Brian, who's calling from Dorchester. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Yes, my question to the gentleman is this. You know, clearly voter apathy is something to be very concerned about. Do they have any concerns that the gentleman, Mr. Turner, who had the seat prior, was, you know, convicted of a crime? And could something like that impact the participation or the outlook that the general public may feel for this position? And also for Mr. Jackson, does he worry at all that because of the conviction of Senator Wilkinson, if that could impact his position for his campaign?
You're probably addressing that question to Cornell Mills, but let me give the first part of the question to Tito Jackson. You're both wanting to replace Chuck Turner. What about this issue? Chuck Turner was quite popular. Yeah. He's endorsed you. He claims his conviction was racially biased, unfair. Yeah. Is he right?
I think what we first need to look at is Councilor Turner's service to the community is really unrivaled. He's actually gave over 40 years of his life to building partnerships in the community and to, as Cornell spoke about, making sure that we fight for the jobs, along with my father, Herb Jackson, who fought for jobs to make sure that women, people of color, and Boston residents got on those job sites. What's I think is most important right now is we have a lack of leadership by not having Councilor Turner there. We have a lack of advocacy by not having Councilor Turner there. So it's going to be up to me, hopefully as the next city councilor, to step in and make sure that I will be there to advocate for those jobs. To make sure that we're advocating for those young people to get a great education, as well as making sure that we have a clean and safe community. So when it really comes down to it, the things that people are most focused on in our community are getting jobs. And so when it really comes down to it, to relive or replay the past, I think we need to begin to look towards the future and make sure that we are able to bring the leadership as well as economic development that we need back to our community. Mm.
And Cornell Mills, let me come to you. The caller made reference to your mother, Diane Wilkinson, former state senator. She was snared in the same federal investigation in which Chuck Turner fell. The question from the caller was, does that contribute to voter apathy? That is, are you somehow tainted, fairly or unfairly, by the same brush that has tainted your mother?
Well, I will answer the first part of the question that you asked about Councilor Turner.
Sure.
I think he was unfairly targeted. I think there are some issues in the in the state government. And it's unfortunate that someone like Howie Carr is the only one who's addressing it, because he spoke out about the disparity in the going after certain elected officials and not going after others. So that is a major issue, and I think Councilor Turner does have a valid point. There is going to be a forum taking place this Sunday from 5 to 7 at Hibernian Hall in Roxbury, which is focused on this issue. It's called the Attack on Black Leadership, that's being hosted by a number of organizations. I think voter apathy is an issue that I've been dealing with for the past 16 years. As a community, a lot of people just don't understand how much politics plays a role in their lives. So a lot of it has to do with voter education, and a lot of it just has to do with we're in the middle of the winter, so a lot of people aren't aware that there's an election season going on. People get excited and rally around issues, and they rally around people as they did with Barack Obama and as they did with Governor Patrick. So we're going to have to be sure that we keep people engaged on all levels of government so that they understand that the all politics are local. So the most important elections are the ones that are closest to home.
That's Cornell Mills. We're also talking to Tito Jackson. They're both candidates for the District 7 Boston City Council seat that's now open. We're going to go and take a call from Mike, who's calling from Dorchester. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I live in the Upham's Corner area of the city, the district.
Sure.
My basic question is about who owns the city. Specifically, the city is planning on closing a number of schools, mostly in communities of color. Also, the city and the state are establishing charter schools. Now, what are they going to do? They're going to close our schools for our children and then turn these over to charter schools. And that's part of the broader question, is like, who owns this city? Is it the corporations or the people? And what would you, as the next city councilor, do about this question?
Okay, Mike, great question. Thanks. Let me go first to Tito Jackson. Education was a big theme last night, as it is across your district. What do you think?
The people own the city, and we need to make sure that we flex our muscle and make sure folks know that. As stated, there are many buildings that are going offline. One of them that most concerns me is Hyde Park High, which is a facility that we actually spent $30 million renovating about 2 years ago, and we now see ourselves with a $67 million gap. We definitely need to make sure that we track where these buildings are going. What I don't want to see, and I think which would be most troubling, to see district school buildings that were improved go to charter schools. That is going to be an issue. And there's actually a hearing.
Now, is this a feeling in general against the expansion of charter schools that you're worried about?
No, not at all. I think charter schools are part of the mix and they're part of the answer.
Sure.
But what I don't want to see, and we have a $500 million backlog in upgrades to schools. And so if there's buildings that have been renovated, we want to make sure that our district school students have access to good quality buildings. But when it comes down to it, we need to track where those buildings are going, and we also need to track the dollars that are being generated from those buildings, because what should happen is those dollars should go into that $500 million backlog so we can pay to upgrade the other buildings that are actually sick. Sure. So I agree with your caller that we need to make sure that we're tracking all of the dollars and cents as these buildings go offline.
Cornell, yeah. Respond to the caller. I mean, I think Mike's broad point was, who owns this city?
Yeah. Well, I disagree with Mr. Jackson. I will say, although the people are supposed to own the city, this city, along with the state, is really owned by big business. Money that goes in, that gets poured into the school system, really doesn't trickle down. There is no accountability measures put in place to make sure that decisions get made, and that the people who are most affected are involved in these decisions. The schools are becoming more privatized. The prisons are becoming more privatized. So there's a lot of money to be made in a lot of different industries. And the only way that the people can start to regain some power is by getting out and voting. 97% of our electorate didn't come out on February 15th. So I'm hoping that they're paying attention. I'm hoping that they understand that this is a very serious issue. And I think what the caller was alluding to was the fact that, you know, we have a system set up that is supposed to be for the people, by the people, but it ends up benefiting a select few of the people. So we need to change that.
Cornell Mills, it's an eloquent speech. I admire you for it. But, I mean, the question I have to ask is that, as a city councilor, what can you really do to sort of make you know, that those concerns, respond in real ways to those concerns?
Well, the first thing we have to do is recognize it. For so many of us, we try to sugarcoat answers and we try to look the other way. But big business is really what's played a huge part in this race. They've dumped thousands, tens of thousands of dollars into this race for some reason. So there must be a reason as to why so many people who live outside of this district are concerned with the kinds of funds and who is going to be set up to lead this district. We have the last three largest pieces of land in Roxbury, Parcel 3, Parcel 9, and Parcel 10. So there are a lot of developers, there are a lot of attorneys, and a lot of people who live outside of the area who are very concerned. If anybody pays attention to the Blackstonian blog, they did a whole report on that today. So these are issues that are very important that I think people need to really wake up. We've been, all of this stuff has been swirling for a long time, and it's starting to hit home. So we need to be very proactive, and we need to organize. And the only way we're going to effectively make a change is by realizing what's really going on out here.
We're talking to Cornell Mills and Tito Jackson. They're both candidates for the District 7 Boston City Council seat that's now open. And we're taking your calls at 800-423-8255 for the next few minutes. And let's go to Moha, who's calling from Roxbury. Hi, Moha.
Hi, how are you? Gentlemen, congratulations, both of you.
Thank you.
I have a comment and I have a question. The comment that I have, I think that 97% of the turnout of the election will tell the message. No one in this election, including, which I have highly respected to the gentleman, can feel that the shoes of Chuck Turner. Chuck Turner is the kind of guy you can call him today, listen, I have a court hearing, can you come with me? I have an inspection of my house, can you come with me? No question asking. Mm-hmm. I'm a homeless, I have no place to go. Let you in your house and give you even the food for to go eat at McDonald's.
So Chuck Turner was responsive. He was responsive to your needs, is what you're saying, Moha.
Yeah, exactly. But my concern, my question is also, number one, I'm a homeowner, but I am seeing a lot of the neighborhood foreclosure. And what is that? It does. A lot of people breaking in and taking all the good things and really, really, really makes a lot of bad pictures with the whole neighborhood. I just want to know with these two gentlemen if they have anything that can really, or the city council can do anything about to stop that this aggressive bank to take the people out of their house.
Okay, Moha, I really appreciate the question. That's a question about your stance on foreclosure prevention, essentially. Let's start with you, Tito Jackson.
Definitely. So I know that Mayor Menino push forward a policy of wanting to push for mediation prior to foreclosure. I totally agree with that. I think we need to make sure that we are aggressively supporting our local CDCs who have been doing much of this foreclosure prevention work. But in addition, I think the other aspect of this is to make sure that those folks who are in these situations also have the economic wherewithal to continue to pay those bills and that they need a job. We know that foreclosure is blight in our community and drives the neighborhoods down in terms of the value. So I think the other piece is, as these homes go back online through CDCs, that first and foremost that we begin to implement the Housing First project, which means that folks who are homeless now are moved from shelters to these facilities that have fallen into foreclosure. So I think it's a very, very important issue, and that we need to be aggressive in helping our homeowners stay in their homes and stay with their families in these communities that they built.
Cornell Mills, you're in the real estate business. What about foreclosure prevention?
Well, I've worked on this issue for the past 2 years. I partnered with Horace Malls, along with Nadine Cohen at Greater Boston Legal Services, just to put together some foreclosure prevention trainings for people. There are a lot of options for anyone who's in foreclosure, whether it be bankruptcy, whether it be a short sale, whether it be a buy down from the bank. So first thing we have to do is just educate our homeowners about this issue. Secondly, a lot of people who are renting properties who live in a foreclosed building, they need to understand what their rights are. And that's a very complex issue. It's one that I've been involved in, and I take it very seriously, because obviously a house and shelter is one of the most important things for any family to have to deal with. I think the blight in the neighborhood and the loss of homes really brings down the value, and it brings down the entire morale of the neighborhood, because they lose that sense of community when they're not owning a home. The mayor did implement a great program. He has the youth, the mayor's foreclosure cleanup crew. They work through some of the local nonprofits to help maintain and make sure that these places are kept up. But we have a lot of work to do to make sure that we're putting those properties back online in a way where people who can repurchase them and start to occupy some of those vacant homes.
Hmm. I'm going to ask you both a question that might put you both on the spot a little bit. Just if someone's out there listening to both of you talk right now, it would be hard. I'd be hard pressed to imagine that anyone would disagree with anything you said. How do you differ? What is the fundamental difference here in the candidacies of Tito Jackson versus Cornell Mills? Tito Jackson, let me start with you.
I think the difference would be I have an actual background in economic development. I've worked at the state level to bring over 2,500 jobs. I've worked with growth districts to attract companies. And the main issue and the main need in our community is really around access to jobs and folks being able to take care of themselves and their family. So I have a demonstrated history and the skills, the know-how, as well as relationships to make sure that we bring jobs and economic revitalization back to District 7.
Mm. Cornell Mills?
I'll say this. Is it disingenuous for a rank-and-file employee to suggest that they're responsible for bringing jobs who work at a state? I mean, I drove my mother to the hearing on racial profiling, so should I say I helped with the racial profiling bill? I mean, I, as a small business owner myself, I formerly owned a restaurant, so I directly have hired people who live in this community. None of the 25 jobs that my opponent speaks to landed in District 7, so it's unfortunate that that although we're the most hit by unemployment, we need those jobs the most, he wasn't able to deliver any of them. Secondly, I think the biggest difference is just our connections to big business and to the infrastructure of the government. You know, a lot of his endorsers and a lot of his handlers are very much involved in a lot of the issues that this community has been fighting against for so many years. If you look at the list of people who've lined up to support him, whether it be the Globe, the Herald, along with some other local unions and politicians, they've never been very favorable to the issues of this district. So I'm more on the ground, I'm more hands-on with the community, and I look forward to going into office, no strings attached, to be able to advocate for this community on their behalf.
Anthony,
and
one more piece. I'm also someone who's going to actually focus on my agenda and lifting up our community as a whole rather than tearing anyone or anything down. So that's another aspect of what I bring to the table.
Mm. And it's just to piggyback on that, it's important that we rid our community of a lot of the people who've been tearing us down. As I mentioned last night at the event, we have a lot of people who are put in positions of power who don't have the city's best interest at heart. So we have to recognize who those people are, make sure that we eradicate them from the process so that we can move forward in a productive way where the people can benefit the most.
We really have just about a minute left, and I don't want to sort of end this segment without talking about approaches toward violence in the cities. This was once a model city, the Boston Miracle. It was on the front page of Newsweek. We got a handle on the violence back in the 90s. Yeah. What's gone wrong, Tito Jackson? How do we deal with it today? We've seen a very disturbing spike in the murder rate, and of course that always hits District 7 disproportionately hard.
Yep. One of the things that has gone wrong is folks in our community need to come together and add unity to their community and neighbors back into the hood. What we need to see is folks stepping up and actually reporting crime. I was over at Orchard Gardens recently, and there was someone who actually emptied a clip of 15 rounds, and no one called the police. If we don't step up and take care of at least our own block and our own community, it's going to be very difficult to make that change. We need to continue our community policing measures where the streets talk, and if you're in a car, you won't hear what's going on. And I think the other piece is we need to continue to build those relationships with our young people and to make sure that they have access to opportunities outside of the streets with recreational facilities as well as jobs.
Cornell, we have about 30 seconds left, so yeah. Last word to you.
Well, a lot of politicians talk about the issue. I think not enough of us get involved in the issue. I've worked as a youth mentor. I've done the street walks late at night in the rougher parts of this city to steer young men from positions of crime. They don't have enough mentors. They don't have enough advocates who they can look to find alternatives. We started a mentoring program at my high school, which has been very successful in sustaining the countering the dropout rate. So if we can keep kids in school, if we can keep them off the streets and find other things for them to do, it will definitely increase in effect the crime rate that's taking hold of our cities right now.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for coming in today and sharing your views.
Thank you, Magma.
That's Cornell Mills and Tito Jackson. They're both candidates for the District 7 City Council seat. Yep. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, the Boston Globe's Jeff Edgers on the sudden departure of Maestro James Levine from the Boston Symphony Orchestra. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.